Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
In this episode, we're going to go into an area of football history that we seldom have traveled on this podcast, and that is women's football, women's professional football, and it's in a book by author Russ Crawford, as he tells us all about the history of women's football in America and beyond, coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have a great episode today. We're going to peer back in that portal of football history and look at an interesting subject that we've touched on a little bit before. We're going to get into some women's American football playing, and a gentleman that's wrote the book on it, titled Women's American Football, Breaking Barriers on and Off the Field. His name is author Russ Crawford. Russ, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thank you, Darren. Good to be here.
Well, we're sure glad to have you. This is a very interesting title, and we'll get into the ins and outs of that, of your book here in a little bit, and talk about it. But first, we'd like to learn just a little bit more about you, Russ. What's your football background, your fandom story, and how you got to the point of writing a book?
Well, I played football at Ainsworth High School in Ainsworth, Nebraska, all 4 years, well, 6 years, including junior high. And then I went off to college, got my teaching degree eventually, and I taught history and social studies in Wabay, South Dakota, and I also coached football there, not very successfully. I went off to Iowa to teach Spanish, of all things, after that. My one-loss record wasn't good enough to get another social studies job. And I helped coach the freshmen there, but I also coached wrestling in Iowa, which is a treat in itself.
That's like the wrestling capital of the world in Iowa.
Yeah, there's some towns that have instead of, every town has a basketball court for kids to play on, but there's some towns in Iowa that have wrestling mats strung up or laid out for kids to come shoot takedowns instead of shoot hoops. So anyway, I went back on my PhD at the University of Nebraska. I worked with Ben Rader, who's a sport historian. He's written a book on baseball. It's probably his most famous one, Baseball, America's Game. And so I started doing sport history with him because, it seemed like an interesting topic. And so I'm probably the football is my number one sport. It's about the only thing I watch anymore. And so once I got my dissertation published, I started looking around for other stories to write about. And I'm eventually married a French woman, and in visiting France the first time, I met a friend of hers who showed me his football helmet. That led me to writing about football in France. And while I was researching that, I found the Sparkles de Saint-Georges. I'm going to mess up the name. Villeneuve-Saint-Georges is where they're from. The first women's team in France. A little while later, Jean-Marc, the friend, and I went to the final of the women's challenge in France in Anières-sur-Seine, which is a northern suburb of Paris. And so we watched the final game there, and I decided that would be an interesting topic to write about. And so when I started researching, It's as if the blinders fell off my eyes and I started seeing women's football everywhere. And so I figured that'd be, you know, quite the topic to write about. And so I think I started that in maybe 2016 and did several years of research, went to several football games in various places, including Canada. Let's see, I've been in France and here in the United States. And this last summer, I was in Vantaa, Finland, watching the U.S. women's national team win their fourth gold medal there. And so that's, you know, basically the process I went through to write this book.
Wow, very, very interesting. So it's a worldwide sport, which always sort of catches me by surprise a little bit, because of course, you know, as soon as you leave North America, you know, football is an entirely different sport, what we call soccer. And so it's great. And it's that the sport is spreading. You know, I've had listeners and readers contact me from, you know, the subcontinent of India and, you know, Europe and, you know, Australia, of course, which is really kind of cool that the American football is all these places and they're enjoying it, you know, as much as we do here in the States. So that's a really great thing.
Yeah, it is. And of course, here in the United States, if you ask the usual person on the street if they know about women's football, they've never heard of it. It's sort of the same way when you talk about American football in Europe or any place else in the world, not many people have heard of it. So around the world, and even here in the United States, at least, women's football is a pretty strong subculture, but not many people know about it, which is one of the reasons I decided to write on that. I didn't want to write about something, you know, maybe, oh, I don't know, the NFL-AFL merger or something like that. That's probably been done to death. I wanted to write about something no one else had ever heard of, or not many people had heard of.
Yeah. Okay. That great. You want to have those unique niches to write about and get that subtopics. Now, let's talk a little bit about what women's football is. Now, you're talking, you know, a worldwide athletic event here. Now, is there different brands of women's football, or, you know, with different rules, or is it all pretty much the same?
Well, here in the United States, we play the usual, much like the males play, 11-on-11, full pad, all that sort of thing. Of course, there's flag football around the world as well. But in countries where there are not as many women who know the game, who want to play, a lot of times, for instance, Britain, I think they started off 6-on-6, full pads, full contact, but smaller teams. As they've played international competition, the British American Football Association, or BAFA, is working on raising it to 11-on-11s. The Australians, I think, started off maybe 7-on-7. Now they're working towards 11-on-11. So in many countries, there weren't that many women, so they had to do smaller teams. And of course, here in the United States, we have 6-on-6. I coached in South Dakota. I coached 9-on-9, which is really weird for me getting used to. And in 6-on-6, 7-on-7 is, you know, it's still football. You're still hitting, but you don't get the same full field experience, I suppose. And that's hurt women and international women in competition.
Okay, so your book is mainly about full contact football. You know, despite, you know, how many participants are on each team, you have a variety there, but it's full contact, helmet, shoulder pads, block, and tackling that we're used to seeing on television on Saturdays and Sundays.
Correct. And my book focuses mostly on the United States.
Where does the history start with women's football in the United
1896.
States?
1896.
Yeah. Really? Okay.
Sort of a drunken brawl was what it turned into. Apparently some college students, some male and female college students were, I assume, drinking. And
no, that wouldn't happen at college, would it?
Yeah, well, I've heard things. But anyway, in the morning, they went out to a park and lined out a football field, and the women started playing. And they had no idea of the rules, apparently, according to the newspaper. There's only one newspaper article on that. But they took to it very well. Of course, they all rushed to the ball and hit each other, and even went into the stands a little bit. And they had to untangle them and get them back onto the field. But they were having a great time, apparently. But a police captain came in and shut down the game because he was worried about the safety of the players and the possibility of a riot, I think.
So, well, I mean, when you're talking the football, that sounds like football that era. I mean, this is 1896. That's 10 years before the forward pass was incorporated into our modern game, and 1912 before it was even really used like we would recognize it. So that's great. So they were taking each other down in mass formation, it sounds like.
Or just a wild scrumble or something like that.
Yeah, there you a scrumble. There you go. Like that word. Okay, so where how did it evolve from that drunken college event to where we start getting closer to what you're seeing, what you witnessed going to these games the past few years?
Well, women have been playing ever since 1896. I have a friend, let's see, Katie Taylor, who's an academic in Great Britain, who's writing about the history of women playing football and coaching football, basically up to around Title IX in the 1970s. And she's uncovered a huge number of women playing. Of course, you might be familiar with powder puff games. That started off in Cavour High School in Huron, South Dakota, I think, in the 1920s. And there were a few women's girls football teams who even beat boys football teams in those days. Well, in the 30s and 40s, there are newsreels you can find of the Los Angeles Amazons playing tackle football, probably at the Coliseum. But in the 1920s in Toledo, there were a couple of promoters who put together two teams of women and started playing barnstorming games wherever they could find a crowd. Apparently, they were making some money at it, but they got some pushback, and from a pretty high source, Lou Henry Hoover, who was Herbert Hoover's wife, the First Lady of the United States, wrote a letter to them and said, "You're exploiting these women. You should stop." I don't think it was that she objected to women playing football, but more to men making money off of it. That was the big thing. And
Maybe create because it was creating almost like a novelty act instead of a sporting event,
maybe that
possibly.
too. That's true.
Yeah.
And so with that, they started having a hard time finding places to hold games, and eventually they just went away. They couldn't find a place to play, couldn't make any money, so they disbanded their team. And so an argument can be made. Of course, the NFL started in Ohio, and you can make an argument for women's professional football, or semi-professional at least, starting in Ohio as well. And then after the 20s, again, women played here and there. They had teams. Some women played on boys' teams. But it really wasn't until the 1970s, late 60s, early 70s, when a guy named Sid Friedman decided to recreate, he was from Cleveland, and decided to recreate that barnstorming idea. And so he created, let's see, the Cleveland Brewers, maybe, and the Detroit, forgetting the name, teams from Cleveland and Detroit, eventually the Toledo Troopers, and that morphed into the Women's Professional Football League. And boy, if I mess up some of these acronyms, anybody listening, I apologize. But there have been so many leagues and so many acronyms that sometimes my AMPS, my absent-minded professor syndrome, kicks in. Anyway, Friedman started these teams that later included the Toledo Troopers, And the Troopers dominated football in the 1970s. They won seven straight championships, won or had a piece of seven straight championships. And as you said, you've talked to Mr. Gwinnan and his book, you talked about his book, We Are the Troopers. And so they were the right. Probably one of the top women's, well, they were one of the top women's football teams of all time. And if you want to throw it open to professional teams, their success is right up there with, you know, some of the men. So does that bring up any questions? I'll pause for breath.
No, that's like you said, Mr. Guinan talked quite a bit about that and, you know, his theory and a lot of actual proof that they might be better statistically than any men's professional football team ever put together, and is more dominant than any other. So that's quite the thing to say about the Toledo Troopers. Yeah. That's for sure.
I'm glad to hear you pronounce that. I've been pronouncing it incorrectly. Guinan.
Yeah, I believe it's okay. Guinan.
Oops. So. All right. So
I'm sure he'll like the publicity.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
That's a great book. I reviewed it for American Sport in American History, a blog. Fantastic.
Yeah, it sure is. Sure is. Okay. So we have, you know, we're up into the professionals now. Has there ever been an attempt to have maybe a collegiate sport of women's football?
Well, here in the last,
you know, of
3 or 4 years, the NFL and the NAIA have collaborated to start women's flag football. Not so far tackle football, though, other than, you know, the powder puff games at various universities. So we do have flag football that's starting to get some traction at the collegiate level. And of course, it's been big in Florida for 15 or 20 years, but not tackle football.
I think we'll even see professional players playing it in a few weeks for the Pro Bowl.
You might see them. I don't think I will.
Yeah, I probably won't either. But, well,
it's been a long time since I watched Pro Bowl.
Yeah, it's I hear you. Story for a different
there
day.
There you
possibly.
Go.
all right, so we have flag football coming up maybe in the collegiate ranks. That'd be a great thing. Now, did I hear rumors that there might possibly be some Olympic events? I know they've been toying with some new sports, and I heard possibly flag football might be one of those, and even regular contact football.
Well, at the last World Games this summer in Birmingham, Alabama, I went to that and watched Mexico defeat the United States in women's flag football. There were teams from Italy, France, Brazil, United States, of course. Panama, and probably some others that I'm forgetting. But that's the first time that flag football ever appeared in the World Games. And so that's sort of seen as a stepping stone to the Olympic Games.
Right. Okay. So that's great for women's football. It's great for all football that is spreading like that.
And
that's
one of the reasons the really International cool. Federation of American Football started hosting the Women's World Championships of Tackle Football was because, of course, they want football in the Olympic Games. They want their sport to be out there to be seen in the Olympics. And of course, they already had men's teams at that point, but if you're going to be in the Olympics, you need to have both men's and women's teams. And one of the things I suppose that makes football a little bit tough for the Olympics is that it's an American dominated sport. Although in flag football, the United States, I think, won the last two world championships before this World Games, and when Mexico beat them. So they hadn't been all that dominant, and so that might give flag football a leg up.
Yeah, well, if you look at other North American sports of spread, you know, between hockey and baseball and basketball, you know, that bodes well for football if they can, you know, even become half the successes that some of those other sports have, because they're very popular around the world, you know, of course, behind soccer, yeah. But they, you know, they're still a growing sport there too. So that's interesting. Okay, so did the so we're, we you talked us all the way up into the 1970s. Now, where has women's football and women's professional football been since the 70s, since the days of the Troopers? Or where are we at in today's world, I guess?
From the 70s, women's professional, if you will, football existed till the Troopers and the Oklahoma City Dolls stopped playing. And then there were a few teams, the Toledo Spitfires, for instance, that won a championship in a successor league. But from the mid-80s to the late 90s, there wasn't any organized women's professional or semi-professional football. Again, in, let's see, 1999, a couple of promoters began another barnstorming effort with the Minnesota Vixen and the Lake Michigan Minx. Actually, at that time, they were the Minnesota Vixens. Now they're the Vixen. So they started barnstorming there. Got a documentary made about them that was on PBS, True Hearted Vixens, I think it was. And so out of that, they also played a game against the New York Sharks, which at the time was a flag football team. But they gave them the equipment and they practiced for a while. If you want to hear more about the Sharks, there's a pretty good book written by Andra Douglas called Black and Blue, Love, Sports, and the Art of Empowerment. She'd probably be a good one to talk about. She started the New York Sharks.
Okay. Yeah, well, we'll need to look her up and see if we can arrange something. That's great. Thank you for plugging her. I'm sure she appreciates that too.
And so anyway, they played that one game outside of their barnstorming teams, and that dovetailed into a new league. And beats me what the name of it was. I think the National Women's Football League. When some of the women thought the promoters, the original promoters, weren't doing what they should be doing, they went off and formed their own leagues. And so in the early 2000s, leagues started sprouting out of the ground, you know, like mushrooms after a rainstorm. Everybody, owners, league officials, thought they had a better idea of how to run things. And that's the thing with women's football is, with the NFL, teams came and went in the early days. There was a lot of chaos. But there was money to be made. And so that kept a core group of owners together. With women's football, since there's very little money to be made, the women have to pay to play, basically. There have been a few times when maybe women got $25 or $50 a game for playing, but that wasn't very common. But since there's no overriding financial concerns, leagues, you know, mushroom and, you know, expand and contract. And so there was a period there when there were maybe five or six leagues operating at the same time. Out of that sort of chaos, the Independence Women's Football League became the most powerful team in the United States, league in the United States. And in 2010, for the first Women's World Championship that IFAF sponsored, they pretty much all of the players that played on Team USA came from the IWFL. Eventually, some of the owners of some teams decided they had a better idea, and some broke away to form the Women's Football Alliance. Right about the same time, the women's football that many people are most familiar with began when Mitch Mortaza created the Lingerie Football League, which gave some competition and some irritation to the women who play in full uniform. Because, you know, when they tell people, oh, I play women's football, they say in lingerie. And, you know, so that's a pretty irritating thing. So that was competition for the full kitted football that was being played across the country. Over time, the Independent Women's Football League eventually folded, and the Women's Football Alliance became the dominant league in the United States. Although, in the aftermath of the IWFL, four teams. The Texas Elite Spartans, the Utah Falcons, the San Diego Surge, and the Seattle Majestics broke away and eventually formed the Women's National Football Conference, broke off from the IWFL that was started by Odessa O.J. Jenkins, who was a fantastic football player and is doing pretty well at business, getting endorsement deals from people like Adidas. And the Women's Football Alliance is still the premier league in the United States. They have somewhere around 60 teams playing out of there, including, well, the four Ohio teams. There were four teams in Ohio before the pandemic, the Toledo Reign, the Cleveland Fusion, the Cincinnati Sizzle, once owned by Icky Woods, and the Columbus Comets. Now, since the pandemic, the Comets have gone, but the Columbus Chaos has replaced them. I'm not sure about the Fusion. The Cincinnati Sizzle folded, but now there's a new team called the Cincinnati Cougars, and I'm not sure what's happening with Toledo. So, you're from Pittsburgh, or you're a fan of Pittsburgh. Have you ever heard of the Pittsburgh Passion?
Yes, I have.
Aha!
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Actually, we used to have a team. I'm in Erie, so I'm about 100 miles north of Pittsburgh. And Erie used to have a team probably about 15, 20 years ago. And they had some games against the Pittsburgh Passion.
I don't know
if it's the same team that the Pittsburgh Passion is today, but sure, there's got to be some affiliation.
Probably partially owned by the late Frank O'Harris, the Passion were.
Right.
It seems like, well, Pittsburgh is a football crazy town. And more so than any other town I've been to where I ask people, you ever heard of whatever the local team is, more people from Pittsburgh have heard of the Passion than any other team that I've asked people about. I make the habit of asking Uber drivers and cab drivers and that sort of anybody I talk to, you know, I'm here for a football game. You ever hear of the Utah Falcons, for instance? And they say, no, what's that? But I had a student from Pittsburgh a few years back. I asked her if she'd ever heard of the Passion. She had. And now you. So that's pretty good batting average for the Passion.
Yeah, I cheated, though. It's because they came here to play some games. And I, being a football fan, you know, all of Western Pennsylvania is pretty football crazy.
That's true.
You know, professional basketball can't make it here. But unless you're a movie with Julius Erving in it, but football and hockey, those are some big time sports here, especially football. So, and we're much very similar in Pittsburgh that, and Cleveland and Buffalo are very similar that way too. So,
yeah.
So, that's quite a 140 year history of women's football. That's quite a deep historic thing. It's, you know, almost as long as tenured as the men's football, because, you know, if you count the 1869 game between Princeton and Rutgers, which many don't because it was more of a soccer game, but early 1880s on up, when Walter Camp changed the rules of rugby and soccer to be American football, that's that's only missing about 15 years of history. So that's tremendous. That's a lot longer tenured than I thought that was for women's football.
Well, back in the 30s, I believe it was, though, the Frankfurt professional football team had a halftime game of women, sort of another one of these sideshow type games.
So you're talking like the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets.
Yellow Jackets, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They had a halftime game at one point, and there was, I've read accounts that some other NFL teams had women's games as well, but I've never been able to run those down. Now, in the more modern era, when the New York Sharks started playing, they actually got to play at halftime in a New York-Dallas game, I think. So I think they were probably the first women's team to actually play before a crowd of men's fans, the NFL fans. And there have been some instances. Oh, let's see, 3 years ago, I think it was at the Pro Bowl, two teams from the Utah Girls Football League, which is also in Salt Lake City, got to play an exhibition during the halftime of the Pro Bowl. And
Yeah,
so
no kidding.
there are starting to become more, well, there's an interest out there for girls to play football at the high school level and even the grade school level, which started up in Canada with in Manitoba, and then about the same time over in New Brunswick. Then it worked its way down south to Utah and for a while in Indianapolis, well, Indiana. So there have been some girls' leagues, and every once in a while you hear there's going to be one in Texas or one in Atlanta, an all-girls tackle football league. The idea being that it's safer for girls to play against other girls than it is for boys. There are all sorts of girls who can play peewee football with the boys because, like Sam Gordon, you might remember her from the 100th anniversary NFL commercial where they had the wedding cake, then the ball flew out. She was the girl at the end that held up the ball and then sidestepped whoever it was. She had a viral video of her running around and through all of her little boys in this peewee league in Salt Lake City. And so out of that, her father and Chris Sacco started the Utah Girls Football League here in the United States. And so,
Interesting.
yeah, and they're still going strong.
Well, hey, that's when you can get into the younger people getting interested, that's going to carry over to a certain percentage of them that are going to want to play and continue to play on up. And hopefully, these professional leagues will have a little bit more merit. I mean, look at what the WNBA is today and where women's professional basketball was, 20 years ago. It's quite a great jump, and is becoming more mainstream year by year. So hopefully with football for women, that'll do the same thing. And folks like yourself that are writing about it and getting the persona out there of it and making the average fan aware of it, that's all good things for the sport. And it's helping to preserve football history, and that's what we love to hear here at Pigskin Dispatch.
There you
So Russ, why don't you,
go.
before we let you go here, why don't we get you to tell you the full name of your book and where folks can purchase a copy?
Women's American Football, colon, Breaking Barriers on and Off the Field, published by the University of Nebraska Press. It is available from them and from Amazon, and I haven't looked at any other places. Good reason they sell books, or Barnes and Noble or something like that.
But hey, that's great stuff. And so, University of Nebraska Press, Amazon, and some of your normal avenues for books, Barnes and Noble, and probably Books a Million and things like that. So, very, very interesting. A great topic, great history. We appreciate you sharing some of this view into women's football and the history of it, and enlightening us to some, and especially your host here, on some great aspects of that history. And we really appreciate you, sir, and we wish you luck with the book.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me on your podcast. And yeah, well, it was a fascinating story. It was very interesting to research and write. Attending football games, I got the chance to be inside the Saints practice facility when the Women's World Games, this is USA Football's attempt to bring up the talent level of women from outside of the US. So I got to talk to women there from around the world, and I've seen some pretty good games, good football, and talked to some pretty tough women. Sometimes I, sort of backed up with my phone a little bit in case they, thought I was had a football or something and was going to hit me. So it's been a blast talking to these women and watching these games and finding what little I could that's been written about them.
That's great work that you do, sir, and we appreciate you and appreciate what these women are doing to play the game that they love, just like men are doing. So, Russ Crawford, author of Women's American Football, we appreciate you, sir, and thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.